This week we've got one focus, which is the Apple Watch Series 5. Last week we discussed the new iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro and Pro Max. So I've been wearing the Apple Watch Series 5 since the day after we recorded. So I'm at 6 days so far. And you don't have one, but you've got exposure to one in your household. So I had a week of that experience before mine was here. And then you have that experience going on 2 weeks now. And Mayo, I think you got to try one on. Is that right?
Yeah, I try, because my brother is the one who's got it. And so I've played around with it a bit and obviously worn it and, you know, verified. It's the first time that I've actually, like, seen the modern 44 millimeter size on me, because obviously I just ordered the 40 millimeter straight off the bat when Series 4 came out. So I never actually bothered trying the bigger size. And so I tried that one on. It's definitely too big for me. But, you know, the screen's nice. It always on is cool. We can get into it, right?
Yeah. You definitely can't wear 44. That was big. I was surprised by that.
My arms are small. Like the 40 millimeter is, I'm quite lucky. The 40 is like a perfect proportion.
Right.
If it was any bigger, it'd start looking weird.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll say two things or a few things to kick us off. So, I'm still working on my like written review. And I think that a lot of what we discuss here today will be a lot of kind of what's going on in my head and what will come out in the written review. Whenever I'm ready for that. The other thing is that, I've got this battery life issue that I've been documenting on Twitter and trying to get some answers on, but it's the biggest thing holding me back from just like putting pen to paper or like writing out my review for real. I cannot get through a day, on a single charge. I'm getting like 12 hours, which sounds like a lot compared to like what an iPhone might do with like active use. Or like an iPad or a MacBook, like 12 hours is like a MacBook Air battery life. And that's like good. But on an Apple Watch, if you wake up at 6 a.m. and put it on, then you're at dinner and your watch dies before you get home. So, it's definitely.
Yeah. And if you're saying like 10 hour battery life on an iPhone, that, you know, means screen on, like you're actively using it. Whereas the watch is, the usage is just, you know, throughout the day, like whilst you're wearing it. And obviously, nowadays, that means with the screen on as well, because it's always on. But in the old days, you could get like a true 18-hour battery life, all-day battery life on Series 4 on an earlier quite comfortably. And it's like, in general, the battery situation with the Series 5 is definitely worse than the Series 4. It looks like there's about like 60% of people who have no problems whatsoever, just based on like Twitter responses and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they admit that the battery is not as good as Series 4, but it's still comfortable to get them through, you know, the day, which and put the watch back on the charger for going to bed. It might be harder in the current environment to do a Series 5 with sleep tracking stuff, just because you'd have to worry about charging it a lot more. Like, you can't really go through the night and then wake up and do it, because probably going to die somewhere in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Series 4 could last like a day and a half. And then the other like 40% of people that are accounted for is people like you, where, you know, you're not doing anything different to your Series 4, like work day, you know, maybe a one workout and then just using the watch throughout the day. And whether you've got like the always on or not, you're still seeing like rapidly reduced battery and it's uncomfortably low. And as I know, especially like earlier in the week when you were using the watch with always on display enabled, your watch would die at what, like 7 p.m., 8 p.m.?
5:30 and 6 p.m. I never made it past
that. Worse. Yeah, and that is just like not acceptable for the Apple Watch experience. Like, it needs to be able to last until midnight when you go to bed or whatever, right? Any time between there. And so there's a huge open question about at the moment about this like sector of buyers who are, you know, understandably really annoyed that their watch won't even, you know, last them through to going to bed. So, and we don't really have a firm answer either from Apple officially or even just like working out in the community as to what the cause of these problems are. Like, my brother's watch is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. His can last through to bedtime without problem. And that's like what you'd expect. But people like you are having issues where it's not even lasting until like dinner time, essentially. We don't know yet whether it's a hardware thing, a software thing. Every time you mention it on Twitter, of course, you get all the random responses like, turn this off, turn off noise, turn off this, use a different watch face. Like, for a start, all those workarounds shouldn't be required in the first place. And I think you tried them all when they basically haven't made a difference, right?
Right. And I'll get like more into battery in a little bit. There's so much more to talk about than just the battery experience that maybe around half of us are experiencing. But the high level thing there is that I didn't restore the watch from the backup of Series 4, but I did set it up in the same way that I'm not like new to the watch and trying different things or even new to watchOS 6. I've been running it all summer. So it's just like, I know what I want my watch to do and what it's capable of doing. So let me do that exact same thing over here. The only variable is having always on. And even with always on turned off, I'm not getting the same battery life as before, which seems to suggest it's not always on that's the culprit. You do get more battery life, which makes sense, but you still don't get Series 4 level battery life. And it's still an ongoing thing, but that's kind of where I've landed so far. And hoping it's software, but I don't want to install a watchOS beta and then review based off that, because one thing I've discovered from just documenting the experience and then writing about it on 9to5 Mac is that it's not just me, which is why I decided to write about it in the first place. But then since I've written about it, more people have come out and told me, yeah, I'm getting 11 hours, 12 hours, nothing new, just a new watch. And I either returned it or I want to return it. And I'm glad to know that more people are having this issue. So it's one of those things where I don't have an answer yet, but I would love for Apple to say, we know that a few users, you know, are having an issue, or even just to have a software update that like addresses it, you know. And
I mean, for the iPhones, they, you know, within the last week released iOS 13.1.1, which one of the bullet points was literally addresses a battery drain issue on the iPhone. So maybe there's an equivalent situation with the watch, and definitely, you know, you just get the feeling that a lot of people are seeing better results on 6.1 beta, but it's not actually officially confirmed or anything yet. So it could just be up to random chance, and we don't fully know the situation. But that's the status as we record, of course. Apple's been releasing software updates so fast at the moment. Maybe it'll change by tomorrow when the show goes out, but that's the current status quo.
Yeah. So what else there is to discuss about the watch that I'd like to do is, at first, just my buying experience. You know, I didn't pre-order on like the hour after the keynote. I wanted to sit with this and decide which watch to buy and maybe even see them in stores before I made a decision between titanium and ceramic as like being, you know, one of the two materials I was interested in buying. And I did that. And then once I tried on titanium in a store and ceramic in a store to know like if the big cost difference there was worth it for me, in terms of like how it makes me feel and everything, then, I decided I will buy ceramic. Shipping was like 6 to 8 weeks out. And so I was sort of like polling Twitter. Does anyone know a store where you can walk in and buy one? And, so many people were helpful. Just a number of people who were like giving me like regular updates and like something in DC or in New York or somewhere. And, I actually thought that you just couldn't buy online to walk in store and then take it home with you, because I just couldn't find any in stores near me. But I was fortunate in that, our colleague Guy Rambo and our boss Seth Weintraub, they were visiting the Fifth Avenue Apple store, the brand new Cube. And, they were there for other reasons. And Seth happened to stand in line for me and pick up a reservation where I got to order the 44 millimeter ceramic, Series 5 online for that store, and then give his pickup information. And then he stood in the line for me at Fifth Avenue, which is not short. And then mailed the box to me, like 48 hour delivery. And so I got to receive that. And, it was really cool. I mean, I did a hands-on on Friday with just like, this is the ceramic Series 5, because it is technically a new design for that. Because we saw ceramic with Series 2 and 3, but not with Series 4, where it got this like new screen shape and, you know, just like wholly really redesigned as much as the watch has ever been redesigned. So now this is the first time we see that in ceramic. And so it is different. And even things like, you know, with the Series 4, they changed the side button to where instead of sticking out like an iPhone button, it's flush, and you've got to just kind of know it's there and you can see an outline. And I love that change. Like, short of just getting rid of a side button, that's the best thing they could have done. And it's really nice on the ceramic watch too. I mean, like, it's a really nice watch. I love it. But just not even noticing that the button is there until you look at it at an angle and see it or kind of feel it. It's a nice touch.
Kind of like 2 years down the line now of the Series 4 design, it's striking how quickly you get used to that being, this is what the Apple Watch looks like. And then you see, you know, the flood of Series 3s and stuff in the wild still. And it's like, you know, that look, that thing looks dated by comparison in a big way, even though the changes aren't like ginormous, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's still at the end of the day, it's a band with a, you know, rounded rectangle on it. But just the amount that they square the edges and, you know, the button changes, it does make it look, you know, a lot more modern and nicer. Whereas the old one definitely like reeks of, you know, computery watch more to me, and the new one feels a lot more like human and just nice to have on you.
Yeah, so you know, I awarded the Series 3 for like 2 weeks before the Series 5 arrived, having sold my Series 4, which, well, you know, that was running watchOS 6, and it was before the release was out. So I had to tell the buyer, whoever ended up buying it, this has watchOS 6, so you'll need to run iOS 13 beta. So just to show I was doing watchOS 6 all summer, and it's an apples to apples comparison in terms of the software experience. But I did do the Series 3 for like 2 weeks before the Series 5, you know, arrived at my home. And, you know, I got used to it like after like 2 days. You know, there is that change of like, this looks old now, and the watch faces are a little bit different in terms of how they're laid out and what they can, you know, fit on screen. But I did get used to it. But in the same line of thought, going from Series 3 to Series 5, like I think a lot of people will do, or Series 2 to Series 5, you know, first gen to Series 5, it's a big difference. I mean, just like legibility wise, I had the 42 millimeter Series 3, and I've always had the bigger screen of the two. But just legibility wise, it's so much easier to read on 44 millimeter. Because it's a bigger screen, like everything can just be larger. The elements of what they show you is larger. So it's nice. And I think it's a design. I mean, who knows how long we'll see this design last, but it's good for now. But the ceramic I really adore. I'm only using it with the soft white, sport band with the ceramic pen that comes with it. I knew that band was in the box because I like poured over the specs page and the what's in the box section and everything. But what I didn't know until I saw people start like unboxing their own is something that the specs page does not reflect, or the what's in the box section doesn't show, which is that, you know, I don't know if this changed for the sport band, but they've always done like small, medium, and then medium large is like one half of the band. You get both sizes, and then you get the band, the half of the pen, which is like a standard size. And I think this year they started making you choose at checkout. Is that right?
Yeah.
Online, at least.
Yeah. Well, like Joshua had to specifically say he wanted the S, you know, small/medium, and not the medium/extra large version.
Okay. On the ceramic watch page, if you look at what's in the box, and they show you what's in the box, you know, you get the watch case, you get the band, you get a charger, you get a brick, then they show you getting the small medium band with 40 millimeters and then medium large with 44 millimeters. And I've always used small medium, but with 44 millimeters or 42 millimeters. And so I took that to mean you won't get medium, you won't get small medium, you'll only get medium large. So before the Series 5 even arrived, I looked on eBay and found someone selling a soft white, this is a very me thing to do, but a soft white sport band for 42 millimeter or 44 millimeter. And the part that I needed wasn't the pen part. It was just the part with the holes. And so I could get the small medium half and then use it with the band that comes with the addition. I paid like $20 for the whole thing. Didn't need that after all. Just the website was a little misleading.
Yeah, especially when you check out. Like when I told Josh, I was like, oh, do you only get, you don't get the other half of it with you now, but you still do. I think it's just, they're just giving you more flexibility on the configuration, yeah, so you can get the small watch and have the big band if you really want to.
Yeah, I don't really get it, because there are some bands that are like, it's literally a different configuration, you know, a different SKU. Like if you get a leather loop, you pick between a certain length of how long the band is. And so when you compare 40 millimeter and 44 for the ceramic version, then they show you with the band that comes in the box. And it's the same for titanium and Hermes. But they show you like one size with the smaller one with the larger, but it worked out anyway. I didn't have to use the one that wasn't brand new, so I was happy about that. I am kind of bummed that with the ceramic watches now, they don't include either the book that comes that came with series 2 and 3, where they talk about like the process of making the ceramic. It was just a nice thing to have. Or the charging dock, you know, the little white pad, circular pad with like the puck that either lays flat or stands up.
Yeah, so the packaging's the same as like buying a sport model, right?
Yeah, the only thing different about it is that the, you know, the wrapper around the band box and the watch box, it's for the ceramic at least, it's like black and white, like gray scale. And then with other watches, it's color. because
they show like the sport band colors or whatever.
Yeah.
It would be nice if you got the nicer box still, because it's still a, you know, $1,400 watch.
Yeah, I mean, even over titanium, like you're buying, you know, you're spending much more, even though both are in the edition family. But I think it's all in, you know, the effort to do the Apple Watch Studio experience where you can mix and match things, and then they have like one packaging size for everything. So in the end, I just put the box in the closet anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I just wish now I need to search for one of those the old books that came with the original ceramic watches though. But yeah, I'm really happy with that. I look at the watch and like so many occasions on my wrist, and I'm just as happy with it now as I thought I would be. I take it off sometimes and just kind of admire it, and I like the look of all the materials. This is just the first time I've had ceramic, and I'm really quite happy with it. The compass part about it that's new, I think that'll, the utility, I mean, that's such a small thing to add, as I've mentioned before, in my opinion. But I think as long as I'm thinking about ways to use that, it will be beneficial. Like, for example, I was on a bike ride over the weekend, and every time I bike around my neighborhood, I end up somewhere different, sort of exploring, and I get lost, and I could look at the map and like find directions back home, but I just want to do it without looking at the map. So this time, what I usually do is just kind of wing it, and then I get even more lost, and then I'm really far from home, and I have to like bike way more than I planned on. But this time I looked at the watch when I realized I was lost. I looked at the compass on the watch, and I was like, oh, there's west where I need to be going, and it's not where I'm facing. I know, it's just like, yeah, this is here. Let me try using it and see how well it works.
And were you using it on the app, or were you using like a complication?
No, I was using it on the app. I'm a little bit nervous about using it as a complication because of the battery life situation. I feel like it's
just another factor. Yeah, just destroy your battery. Yeah. But that is a decent use case if you are bike riding. If you use like, you could use like the Explorer face and have the, or the you can do it Infograph modular, because the Infograph modular wide complication zone for the compass is really, really cool, because it's like a big long dial. Mm-hmm. Rather than just showing you like a little triangle, it's almost like a focus dial type design. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice look. So if you are doing like the bike riding stuff, it might be an idea to have like a second watch face with it on there. Obviously, you know, day to day you don't want a constantly updating complication for the compass for the orientation heading, but if you are doing like the kind of bike riding stuff, it is a decent option.
Yeah, and something I mentioned in the review is, You know how in the workout view, like if you're in a workout, the workout app is going to take over if you're using the built-in workout app over your watch face. So otherwise,
yeah,
the watch face takes over. But if you're doing workout, that's what takes over the screen. And so in that regard, in the moment I was thinking this, it would be kind of cool to have compass as like one of these things, you know, because you can pick like 5 stats, you know, like your total time, your calories burned, your heart rate, your miles, your average miles per hour, your current miles per hour, you know, those kind of things, distance traveled. And it would be neat to have like one of those 5 things be a compass, you know, or have it up in the corner, you know, it's like a little thing in the corner if you got a Series 5 or later. So,
and one of the interesting things about the Worker app is they've always had a lot of customizability for those metrics, because you can still go back to the old like WatchOS 1 design of single metric mode, where it only shows one thing on the screen at once with the ring, or you can go to the multi-metric mode, which is the default now, where everyone is kind of used to. But even on the multiple metric mode, you can go in there and there's like, you know, twice as many metrics as what they show you as standard, and you can configure and change them out. So it wouldn't be a million miles away for them just to add like compass or direction as one of the options there.
Yep. And then just like using the compass, like it's such a pretty app. I think that the thing that makes it so pretty is that it's designed around the constraints of being on the watch. Whereas on the iPhone, they can do anything. And so they kind of do. And it's like this like black and white, very like under-designed, but like pleasant to look at experience. Whereas on the watch, they need to put a lot of information on a screen without you scrolling and moving around. And they do that where there's like, there's details of data around the circular, you know, design of the compass. You can scroll and then see that in like much larger text, and see some more information there. But just the, like, even like the color scheme of it all, it looks really neat to me. I like the compass look a lot.
Yeah. You get like the splash of orange and that kind of thing. Whereas the iPhone compass is very, very, it's very reminiscent of the iOS 7.0 era, like incredibly under designed. Like, here's a compass in black and white with some white tick marks going around it. Like, it's very, very basic. You can even just see the difference in like the app icon between the watch compass icon and the iPhone icon. It's like worlds apart. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if they, you know, infuse the iOS compass with the watch design, because I think overall the way the watch does it is a lot better to look at.
Yeah, and it's also nice that they didn't just like port the iPhone UI of compass, you know, over to the watch and say, well, we designed it, you know, 7 years ago. let's use that. You know, they started from scratch and it's cool. I mean, I think they could probably do a Series 5 and up watch face that's based on that sort of color scheme, where kind of like how Explorer has the LTE signal like fixed in as like a complication that you can't remove or add anywhere else, even though you can add an LTE complication now. It works different than what that does, in that it's not always visible unless you're using it. There could be like a new version of Explorer. Explorer would be a good name for it, where it's based around the like visual look of the compass app, but it's a watch face. And I mean, the circular design just kind of begs for it. Do you know there's a toggle for the compass setting, I think both on the iPhone and the watch, that the option is off by default, but the option is to turn on using True North. Do you know what that does?
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like you could Google it. I think because off it uses magnetic north, right? And then I believe True North is actually pointing to like where the North Pole is. I think that's the difference, but I'm saying that like very tentatively.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's see. You can do a Google search and get some answers, but I played with it and it's not what I wanted it to be. Where what I think I want from the compass app that isn't there is that I'm playing with this. So north on the compass is the red arrow, and you have like the orange circle around it for like the color scheme, but you've got the red arrow that points north all the time, and then the top of the dial sort of is like this little tick mark that is like the direction that you're pointing. And so when you move from that red arrow on the compass, you know, you go to the right, you're at northeast, you're at east, it always points south on the opposite end. But if you have a physical compass, I guess it varies, but sort of what I expected to see was like not the direction that I'm facing be the top, but north be the top, you know, northeast, southwest around the dial. And then the arrow faces where you are, because right now the arrow is
right. So
fixed.
Let the labels stay fixed and then the line moves. Yeah. That's what you were thinking.
Indeed. Yeah. And that's not the case. It's the opposite of that. And I don't think you can change that.
Yeah. You can tap to set a bearing so you can get like degrees from where you are.
Yeah.
You can't like statically fix the labels in place.
Yeah. Cause I think that's what I would look for if I had the option, is to make the circle with all the labels stay fixed. And then all I change is like, I move around that fixing place. Cause it was a little bit disorienting to me when I first tried it. It's like, you know, in the moment on the bike, looking for directions home, you know, the direction home. I adjusted, but I think when I went home, I was like, oh, let's see if I can change that. And you can't, as far as I can tell. And then True North is not that. That may be True
North.
Yeah,
so what they're simulating is how an actual compass works, because it kind of like rotates on its own.
Yeah.
But in software, you could definitely have a mode where it like fixes to, you know, northeast, southwest, that kind of arrangement.
Yeah, maybe it's in maps where I see the compass, you know, it's either fixed or it's like relative to where you are, because there is the compass in maps too. So maybe that's where I'm getting this like disoriented feeling from. But anyway, I found use there. I think it's a pretty complication, but the battery life concern makes me not want to use it, even though I think it looks nice. And then an app. So there's, I think SkyGuide is one of the first ones that they talked about that would be able to have the compass integrated. This Moon Plus Plus app from David Smith came out this week or last week. And the main reason the app exists is that it changes the, you know, you get a built-in moon phase complication that all it does is show you the moon phase. You tap it, nothing happens. It's just the moon phase. And Moon Plus Plus is a more accurate depiction of what the moon looks like in the sky. And I've noticed that before. And when he was describing like making this app, I was like, I want to be involved in like trying this when it launches. I got to do the beta for it, but, it's a cool complication, but then you tap it and it launches the full app and it takes advantage of the compass too, where if you have the Series 5, you get a little icon that appears and you can tap it and then you can sort of find the moon in the sky based on how you're oriented. So. These are small things, but, it's fun to play with one, you know, at the time when it's new. And then, you know, I think we both agreed the bigger impact on having a compass in the watch will be walking directions with the direction that you're facing. And that's a big thing that I took for granted on the iPhone. And now it's on the watch. So that's cool.
Although on the watch in the map at the moment, you can't make it rotate based on the compass. It only changes the little cone that comes out of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the iPhone, if you tap the compass thing twice, you can make it lock and actually rotate the whole of the map.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, on the watch at the moment, that doesn't happen. So that'd be a nice thing for them to, you know, do in software eventually.
Yeah. So I'm looking at myself, and what you can do is tap on the location corner, and that just takes you to where you are, and there's no other toggle from that. It's just the cone, which wasn't there before.
Yeah, but. So whereas on the iPhone, there's like a second level where they actually rotate the map based on your heading.
Yeah. The other thing is I want to mention the new Meridian watch face.
Meridian.
Yeah, Meridian. And so we discussed this on the podcast before that Meridian is in watchOS 6 on Series 4 and Series 5. And, you know, the big thing there is it's kind of like California, but with much less customization. It's got a similar like outer look, but I don't think there is a circular version of it. And it's full screen analog watch face with 4 sub-dial complications. And then on the addition, it has its own color option different from other watches where it doesn't change the watch face color, changes the watch hands colors. I think that's what I showed you, right?
Yeah. It was black hands.
So that's interesting. I haven't really used that watch face much. I think it's cool in all the ads, but I'm California with all the numbers showing, I love. And then Infographic Modular and Infographic Compact. Those 3 faces are like in my top 3 rotation. I've got Marie in there just to kind of check out. You know, the fun thing to do is see what all the faces do in between modes, you know, between always on and then in the resting mode. But Meridian's interesting. I think that's the face where it's like, I guess that by default, they show it with a moon phase complication in the center. Or I guess there's 4 they pick, you know, from. But I think Meridian, like the whole name theme and everything is it's meant to be like compass sort of related. How did you describe Meridian to me before we knew the watch face or, you know, or like,
what? Yeah. So there's a Meridian line around the earth and that's where Greenwich Mean Time is based around. And so that runs a big line around the center of the earth. And so that's like 0.0. That's like the reference point for like time calculations. And so in like the UK, at least there's a place called like the Greenwich Mean Time, there's like a museum type place and you can stand on the line and they like mark it out. So that's where it comes from. That's where the name, that's the origin of the name.
There's a city in the state where I live in Mississippi called Meridian, and it's pretty center between that. It's like the middle of the state if you're cutting it in half, but it's not the center of the state from left to right. So it's center top to bottom. I'm not sure if any of this is connected, but there is, I think that is like the sort of compass inspired watch face of this cycle, even though it comes to Series 4. It hasn't stuck with me as with the face that I'm using.
I think California is better.
Yeah, there's way more customization. There's something that you know, in podcasts lately and like online commentary, especially with Always On being a thing where you can see people's watch faces and you can share your watch face more often. More criticism of like what a watch face, what's pretty about a watch face and what's ugly about a watch face. And, you know, is computer watch too, you know, you don't want to show those things. And to me, any watch face that I've like used on my own before Always On was a thing, I've done it in a way that it shows what's important to me. And you can hide complications that are sensitive from Apple, not developers yet, but maybe in the future. But I've been a little bit confused about like the whole discussion that's been going on in the community about like what makes a watch face look nice, because I think like California is really nicely designed. I think there's a well-documented history of Apple and the Apple Watch and studying horology and the world of analog watches and people who make these things, like being watch fans, you know, analog watch fans, not like, you know, sports watch fans. That there is some of that too, but it isn't like people who never use watches decided to make the Apple Watch, you know. So I don't quite get that. And even like the digital faces, I don't quite get any hesitation to use what looks good to you outwardly as well. So I think if anyone's, you know, hearing that and it kind of sways them, sit with it a little bit and think on it. Cause I don't think that's not my experience. And,
yeah, I've never found a analog face that I like on the watch that is actually circular. So, And that's the majority of the watch faces up to now. And if you're on Series 3, that's your only choices, right? But if you have Hermes, they've had the ones that actually fit the rectangle where the indices go into the corners, and now you get basically that experience with California. So my personal complaints about the analog situation have been essentially addressed with California. I think California is a really, really good addition to the lineup, but I tend to use the digital faces anyway, and I think Infograph Modular does actually look quite good. I know people like to say just like a jumble mess. I turn off the top left complication, which is like the circle one, just because I don't think it aligns very well. But if you turn that off and just have that blank, then you get everything else like aligned to the right hand side of the watch, the time, and then the big complication in the middle, and then the three circles on the bottom. I think it looks pretty nice.
You know what I think it might be? I don't want to sound in any certain way. Oh, this is going to come off the way that I don't want to sound like, but I think I might be good at like at what you can do with watch faces. I think I might be good at like finding good layout, you know, good complication options, in a way that's not just for me, but like the way I look at my version of Infograph Modular is that this could be a pre-installed default. Or if you were selling a watch that's just fitness tracking, that this is what it would, this is the only thing it would do. And it would look like this is supposed to look this way, not you can do anything you want and it will come this way. And if you stick with what comes out of the box, I don't think they look that great.
It's a bit unsatisfactory, like the defaults.
And it's often the decisions of like what they give you are not because they think it's what most people will use or what looks the best, but it's going to be, this is what's new this year. Like you're going to see a lot of the hearing complication. You're going to see a lot of the compass complication. And it's not because we think everyone will have this on the watch face, but we think that this is a good way for you to discover that. And then you can change it to whatever you want. But yeah,
it's like how with Series 4, they started advertising and defaulting to loads of the color faces that just filled the watch with a background color, whereas up to that point before, they'd always relied on, you know, the OLED black effect. And the reason they went with full color is to emphasize the edge-to-edge display.
But yes,
in real life, I would never choose those faces, really. I think they look wrong.
Even with the full screen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We've all read some surprising online reviews, right? Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for, or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? Read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at Captera.com/happy hour. Not familiar with Captera? Captera is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. With over 1 million reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories, covering the entire range of business needs, from project management to email marketing to even running your own yoga studio. No matter what kind of software you're looking for to get your business off the ground or to simply optimize existing workflows, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. How'd you get started? Go to capterra.com and drill down into a subcategory like app design, home building, insurance, or banking. It's completely free to look around and explore what's available. Don't trawl the web with endless Google searches. Capterra brings everything together into one simple-to-browse directory. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for your business. Visit capterra.com/happyhour for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/happyhour. Capterra, that's spelled CAPTERRA.com/happyhour. Capterra, software selection simplified.
A bit more on the always on situation. So first off, I'll say like it's really nice and ways that I don't know that I expected. I mentioned to you before that the reason I cared most about always on is sort of what I just talked about just now, which is that the outer expression of what you care about, you know, what complications you pick. In my case, you know, activity rings and heart rate and quick access to music and workout, on my main watch face, that says something about me that I like to express on my watch face. And so it's a good feeling knowing that if someone sees my watch face, they see what choices I've made and how it reflects my style and lifestyle. And I'm proud of those things. So I like that about it, but something you mentioned, and I hadn't ever really picked upon it so much before the always on watch face, is that in a workout, it does feel like it takes a second or two longer than it should to turn the screen on after you do the gesture to raise your wrist.
Yeah, I don't know why it is, but there's definitely more of a delay in the screen responding to you when you're in the workout app than if you're just walking down the street. I don't know if the wrist detection algorithms are just more tuned for like dormancy into hand raise versus when you're like actively moving your arms around anyway because you're in the middle of a workout. But for whatever reason, there's the extra lag where it's like, oh, that's annoying. Because I have a Series 4 and I never get like frustrated by the screen turning on just to see the time. Like it doesn't affect me that much. Not saying I wouldn't enjoy the always on if I had it, but it doesn't come into play as much as when I'm doing a workout, I'm running, and then I turn my wrist and it's the extra beat that just is the disconnect. It's like, I just want to see you the current elapsed duration.
Yeah.
And it just takes too long. You can see it.
I wonder if what it is that it's computational and it really is taking like a longer than it would without a workout going, because it's got to present the current number of whatever is happening versus just the time.
And it's running the heart rate sensors at full whack and all of the other stuff.
Yeah. So it could literally be computational. And so in that sense, even though we know the Series 5 has the same processor as the Series 4 and the system in a package has a new version number because of other reasons, but the processor in terms of the CPU is the same. And so it shouldn't be faster, but it feels faster in a workout situation because you raise your wrist. And even if you see for that split second the always on mode, you still see what you're looking for in terms of, you know, you don't see like the parts of seconds. So it's accurate to the second. It displays up to the second. It doesn't display, you know, like
milliseconds.
Yeah. Right. And so you won't see that at a glance, but just seeing any of the data that you're probably looking for instead, you know, how far have you ran? That stuff you see instantly because it's displayed. Even if you get to watch the animation of the rest of the face coming online, you know, sort of thing. So in that regard, it does make the watch feel more responsive and just faster, like a CPU change would have done if we had that. And like you'd see, you know, in the first few watches, but it's just all sort of the illusion of like how fast it, you know, or really it's not even an illusion. It's the real number of how fast you can see what it's showing. Because it literally is showing you data, just not all the data in terms of the milliseconds. So, I find that to be really enjoyable. Checking the time, like the thing with the coffee cup situation. So if you've got, you know, a bag in one hand and a coffee cup in the other hand, I've worn the Apple Watch for so long that I'd not had recent experience of knowing what checking the time with the coffee cup in my hand would be like. And obviously you can't, do the raise your wrist gesture without pouring coffee on yourself. But I had noticed a few times this week, just in that exact scenario of I can kind of lean over the watch and see the time. So my hand can't rotate, but I can do like a lean forward gesture with my body. So it's still a gesture, but it's one that's possible versus not possible before with the always on, not available. So that's been useful. Typing at the desk, you know, like there's information on the Mac, but like my activity rings are right there. I can look down without taking my hand off the keyboard while I'm working and like see my heart rate over the last few minutes, activity ring progress for the day and the time, you know. That's been useful. Not having always on turned on, you know, in this last like 24 hours of trial to see what it does to battery life, I've really missed it. It does feel like the watch is dated now, you know, like when I see it, it feels like it's dead or turned off. That didn't take long to feel. But in general, like the having always on, it's really useful. In workouts though, the speed thing is one thing, but just doing different types of like weight workouts at the gym, I did find that there are a lot of situations where always on doesn't mean always facing you. And I wonder if in that situation where, you know, in every different workout type that I was trying out with weights, the watch was facing away from me. And something that my mother-in-law does with watches before the Apple Watch was turn the like wear it upside down or backwards, where the time's in the bottom side of your wrist. And so, you know, if you're using a Bluetooth heart rate monitor, then it doesn't matter like where the heart rate sensor is, you're going to get the same reading anyway. And so maybe I wonder, like maybe I would do that, like take off the watch, reorient it and have it like legible, but on the bottom side of my wrist. So I can see how long I've been going, how many calories I'm burning, what time is it, that sort of thing. So I think
it's an interesting idea. I've never got my like head around that. It just looks wrong to me. But yeah. I could see, like, especially for workout situations where, you know, your the position of your hands is dictated by your activity and not you haven't got like the free will to do whatever you want with them.
Yes.
I can see it, but it's not ideal, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, if you have a ceramic pen, then that's what's outward facing, and so then you get to do a little show there. and they did show like different workout scenarios where you can see your wrist, you know, I guess like doing a push up or something, but you can't tap it. And then in those situations, having your watch on the regular way makes perfect sense. I found that even though with always on is a thing, there's so many limitations of like the first version of always on, where it's just the time or your active workout phase, that you still can't raise your wrist or tap the screen. And so the classic like nose tap trick, it's not dead yet. Your hands are full. You can kind of like, you could reach the watch for your face if you want to. You have an alert that comes in, you get the sound and the tap, and you can't see it because you're on the always on watch face and sort of like rest mode. But if you tap it with your nose, then you can read what it says. And I've totally experienced that even with always on. It seems like eventually always on will be much more than the watch time. You know, as battery life improves, processors get more efficient, then you'll see like one day you could just do always on for everything, and there's no difference. And is, you know, you can say I want to have apps last for 70 seconds on screen wake. I want the watch to you know, use the last app if it's been active in the last 2 hours. And then it's just, you know, there's no difference except for like brightness in what shows.
Yeah.
But right now it's not that, like, it's really aggressive about, you know, risk goes down, comes and you're in a workout, if you're in a different app, come back up, and then you're in the workout app again, you know. Or risk goes down, then you know you see your watch face, but then it comes back up and that. I don't love the look of like the app in the background blurred out with digital time, especially using analog faces. So I found that the watch, because it feels more like a traditional watch, because analog faces can always show. That's nice, but if you're using an app for some reason, like, you know, in messages, or if a notification comes up and there's like the full screen and then it goes into the rest mode, then you get the digital clock. And my first instinct on seeing that and not the watch face is I'm in low power mode where it's just the time because it looks so much like that where it's just the time and that's it.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate they don't have like if you're using an analog face as your current watch face that the, you know, the blurry app clock is also analog. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that it's always digital is a bit lazy. Like they could have had a default analog face as well to go there.
A bit of this, again, battery aside, but a bit of just like the decision that they made with how it's implemented feels like when the Series 3 first came out and it was the first to have LTE, but then for a few weeks, maybe a month and a half or so, there was no streaming music yet. And that was like the big thing. You definitely couldn't do podcasts because there's an app yet and you couldn't do audiobooks. So it was LTE for calling and messaging and, you know, email and getting in all the notifications and using data, but you couldn't stream music yet because there was no streaming over Wi-Fi before that. It was just play what you have local. And then they eventually worked on that and they caught up and they added iCloud Music Library and music streaming. If it feels like that, I hope, and that what they give us now is like what they – the most important things, but then they go through and they add, without watchOS 7, a year later, they add more Apple apps, more like Apple scenarios, even not even like a full app, but just like this sort of state of the watch where it gets its own always on. And having an always on analog default face, even if it's just the hands, would be cool. Because it is a little bit jarring going from analog to digital throughout the day based on what the watch is doing. My other complaint.
Or it could even go back. Like, I don't understand why in the blurry mode, could it not just show your actual clock face?
Yeah. That would make sense too. One of the big things for me that I noticed before I had one of the watches, it was like the very first night that my wife had hers was, you know, the default on watchOS is that if you play audio on the watch or connected to the watch from on the iPhone, or I think even like HomePod and Apple TV count for this, the default is to auto launch the now playing screen on the watch, even if it isn't playing from the watch. And it makes sense. It was like a feature request people had that if you're playing a podcast on the phone, that you want to have very fast access to that playback, those playback controls, including volume from the watch. So what they did was they made it automatically show now playing there without tapping in on an indicator or finding the app for it or, you know, so on. But they didn't make that work with always on mode where it has, you know, you can see it at a glance, and instead it becomes blurred out in the background with a digital time. I prefer to have audio apps not auto launch. So it's one of the first things I turn off whenever I set up a new watch. I think it's in like the watch settings in general, and then it's under like auto launch. But they need to make that, like, that's like the next priority for me, more so than the analog watch face, is to have that just work with auto or always on, because it can be static. It doesn't have to do anything, you know, it doesn't update. But if you're going to show that over your watch face when it's on, then make that work when it's not on. You do get into some, I mean, just in how they've done always on, you do get into some weird things where, you know how they have the watch faces where if it's like a white background, the rest mode is like a black background.
Yeah.
I don't like that transition. I feel like it's, I don't like using the light faces anyway. And I don't want to see it change every time I raise my wrist. And I'm not even super sold on the sort of like the zoom effect that it has where when it's in rest mode, it's like smaller visually, and then it pops out at you and animates in when you raise your wrist. I think that's cute for like the first day, and then I'm kind of tired of seeing that, and it feels like it's using resources it doesn't need to.
Yeah, I saw that on Josh's watch, and I immediately thought that animation is too slow. Like, it needs to be much faster, like an instant popping.
Right. If you're gonna have it, let it turn off, or let it turn off, or make it faster. The other thing is if you don't have the watch face look different in rest mode, and I like mine to match in rest mode so it's not as jarring, that it can look like everything on screen is tappable. Like if you've got complications, you know, or you want to swipe down for a control, or, you know, notification center, swipe up for a control center, that because you can see your watch face, it seems like your watch is ready for you, even if it's dimmed, but it's literally like just like if it's asleep. you can just see it. But none of the digitizer is like looking for any motion besides, you know, a tap. And so I found that I will try to swipe up for control center or swipe down for notification center on that rest face. And then it feels like it's broken because you can't, you've got to, you know, if it's already, if it's not like a raised, if it's already like a raised position, then you got to like tap the screen or click a button to make it activate. And so that's a difference between the way it used to be. It was off. So then you knew you needed to tap it or raise your wrist for in a motion. Now you've got to sort of take a second to decide, is that activated or not? And there's always a difference, whether it's the color of the watch hands or the seconds flashing or something about it will change. But I have found that I've looked at the face. It seems bright enough for me, and I go to do a motion with it, and it doesn't respond because it isn't ready to respond to any motion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. Like, another thing I saw when I was testing Josh's out is that when you tap the crown when it's in the dim mode, like normally when you tap the crown from the watch face, you expect it to go to the honeycomb grid. But when on Series 4 and earlier, when your watch is turned screen off and you tap the crown, you click the crown, the watch face just lights up, right? And then the second click is what actually takes you to the honeycomb. Well, when it's always on, I feel like the physical button press is intentional enough that it should actually treat that as you just wanting to go to the honeycomb grid, because what it does at the moment is you click it once and it just lights the screen up. It's like, okay, but you know, if I'm clicking the button in, I feel like that's enough of a signal that I actually want to use the watch and not just have the screen go from dim, from the always on mode to the active mode.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that relates to what I'm experiencing too. And that also, like, if I'm in the rest mode, you know, always on mode, and I tap a specific part of the screen to like launch an app from a complication, you know, I can't say that they should do this, that they've done it wrong, because it's turned off for resources, I suppose. They must have the whole digitizer turned off, except that it still responds to a tap. Maybe that's accelerometer. But it does kind of have like that, like, paradigm shift where before you could always tap on your complication to launch the app. And now there's a sort of delay to, you know, you tap it and maybe your screen's in rest mode and it's got to turn on first, and then you tap it again. And that kind of makes the case for using one of the color schemes where, it has a good, you know, it shifts and you can look, glance at it and tell what it is. But that would get more into designing your always on face to be different than your on face, you know, because I don't want to have like a white background for the watch face just so I can distinguish easily, is it on or is it not on? But that does speak to how good the rest mode is, because it can be nearly the same brightness or nearly the same dimness as the face would be otherwise, you know, if you're in dark light, like a dark environment. So those are really small things, but that's the kind of thing that I really appreciate about being able to try it out myself, because I would never experience that having, you know, looked at like a hands-on of this thing, or like looked at like Apple's presentation. But just in wearing it and feeling it, I just have that instinct. Okay, I can see the screen, swipe up on that screen, it's the watch face, but oh no, it doesn't work because it's dimmed, you know? I wonder if those are the kind of things that you'll get used to in time, or if it will always be, man, I wish I could actually interact with it when it's, you know, and let the interaction, let the tap be what wakes it up, you know, but have the tap be interpreted, not just, you know, a single tap, you know, not interpreted as to where it is.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar experience when the iPhone 10 was new, because obviously that introduced tap to wake in that year as well. And with the iPhone 10, you can, you know, you swipe to unlock, right? You swipe up from the bottom to unlock the phone. But if the phone hasn't raised to wake on, you first have to tap and then swipe in two motions, like release your finger and put it down again. You can't, and I remember the first couple of days using the iPhone 10, I would tap to wake, and without releasing my finger, immediately swipe. And in the olden days, that just didn't work. And you have to kind of train your brain. Okay, you've got to tap in the middle and then swipe from the bottom. Like, so there's definitely like an adjustment period, but at the same time, in an ideal world, the tap would be a tap. Like, you wouldn't have the two phases. So it's kind of a, like, you'd get used to it, but also if you were trying to, like, you know, nitpick it to pieces, it would be better if it could just work as you expect it would.
Yeah, it's definitely a compromise for the sake of battery life, and so it's necessary right now. But, you know, say 10 years from now, you'd hope that this changes based on how, you know, you hope that they get better at managing power in this form factor, the technology improves in that way. And so that this is not the ideal. If you had infinite power, you know, management in the watch, that you wouldn't design it this way, that it's because of, you know, the power constraint.
Yeah. If you had an infinite power supply, you wouldn't have any distinction between being dimmed or always on or not. It'd all be just the watch,
right? Yeah,
if we live in the realities of the world, right. So that's how it is for now.
Yep. And who knows, maybe a new CPU next year will make this feature even better. You know, like, zooming way back out, I really do feel like at $200, the Series 3, if it's your first Apple Watch, that is a really good watch to have. It's not much more to change the size of the watch. I think it's $30. And then I think it's $100 between models to add cellular. So you can do that at half the cost of the Series 5. And that's in Series 4. Series 3 is not lightning fast on watchOS 6. So, if you just use it for like fitness tracking and that kind of thing, you probably won't care, but at any time you go like to the app launch or the Honeycomb grid, you watch that kind of stutter and play out versus like a very clean animation. And I don't think it's because the watch is slow, but I think it's because watchOS 6 isn't tuned for that watch yet. And maybe whenever you see watchOS 6 come out for the Series 1 and 2, then that performance will have improved for Series 3 as well. But for now, it's really a decision of like, you know, do you want to spend twice as much on Series 5? And if you do, you get a lot of good stuff there, you know, unless you're in the battery situation. But most people don't have that. And even like for older people, I would recommend finding a Series 4 or using the Series 5 because you've got the ECG feature, you've got fall detection, which is a very big deal. And then just legibility. Like even if you go for the 40 millimeter, that's more legible than the 38 millimeter. You know, and you can crank up the screen, the text size on any of these, but having a bigger canvas is going to be a difference that you can't change. So it might cost more, but there are probably a lot of scenarios where it doesn't just mean, buying a Series 5 is because you want the latest gadget, but there's also like practical differences there in terms of what features are offered, and then how you can use it. So, it's again, you know, I'm glad they have Series 3 in the lineup. I can't say I recommend it for most people. It's got to come down to both budget and needs. But there are features in Series 5 that you'll get that you might not know you'll need in the future, but that will come in handy, like the built-in ECG. So it's tough, but I can't wait to hopefully sort out this battery situation for me and others, and then also, you know, put all this down into a review and publish that.
Yeah, because it's such a smear on, you know, what should be such a nice experience and like focus on, you know, the compass is there, but essentially it's about the always on screen. And at the moment you're just in this quagmire of, well, to actually be able to even last the day barely, I have to turn the always on off. So yeah, it's just an awkward situation that, fingers crossed, a software update can resolve, but that's just a big question mark at the moment. And if it's not a software problem, then that's an even bigger, you know, can of worms.
Yeah, yeah. I will add that I'm going through the Apple Care process too, just so they know. And I'm encouraging people who have the similar problem to do the same thing so that they can, you know, it's one thing to have like tweets online or a story on it, but to have consumers flagging this to support, and then support can see the numbers and then they'll say, oh, there's enough people that really need to address that. Then they could be oblivious to it. And based on the reviews, I mean, like I was really happy with the BuzzFeed Apple Watch review because I had a table of battery life and different scenarios, and no one had, I'm not going to say no one reported this, no one had this experience because they would have loved to say that the battery on the watch doesn't last a day, you know, or get you through the 18 hours like the old one could. But I honestly believe they just didn't experience what I'm experiencing, you know. But
yeah, like I said, Joshua's watch is perfectly fine. It's not. It's definitely not everyone.
Yeah,
but we haven't worked out what the symptom or the cause is yet.
Right. My wife's is smaller, and we do check-ins all the time. Like, we'll do the same workout. We'll do this, you know, wake up at the same time. And then I'll say, "What's your watch at?" And she's like, "Oh, it's like 95." I'm like, "Oh, okay, I've got 70." And she has the space gray aluminum. That was like what she chose. And then she saw my ceramic and she was like, "I kind of like that a lot. Maybe I should get that." And I was like, "You can, like, we can exchange yours. And, you know, it's not a big leap once you've already bought the watch to go that, you know, up there." She was like, "Honestly, I don't want to risk the battery situation that you're having." So I'm like, "Okay, we don't have to." I'm passionate about the watch, and I think it's a great product, and it can really, you know, do wonders in your life if you embrace it. And so to have people tell me I've returned it because of this issue, I hope they can get around that. You know, I hope Apple can get everyone around that. So
yeah, because it is sad. Like, I love the watch too, but at the moment I wouldn't tell people to get the Series 5 just because I know that you know that I wouldn't want to have that battery experience. I'd hate it. Just, you know, destroy it. Like, I want to do workouts at 8 p.m. you know, to finish my rings, and all the battery's dead. Like, it's just not good.
Yeah. And
it's a shame that we're having this conversation at all.
Yeah,
you know, 5 years into the watch's lifespan. Like, this was a big question that overhung the first generation watch in the 6 month lead up to it coming out. Everyone was stressing about, is the battery going to be good enough? And it turned out to be, you know, reasonably fine for a whole day.
Yeah.
And we've taken a big backwards step here. Like it's not everyone, but it's a big enough chunk of people that it's not like isolated incidents.
Yeah, it would. If it were just me, then I would just exchange the unit and get another one, right? And then say, "Oh, it's just a lemon." But there's so many people who have contacted me or that I've seen that have it as well. So we'll see how it gets sorted. But it literally is the thing that's preventing me from like writing the review right now, because I'd have to mention it. I can't not. And then that comes down to the recommendation. You know, I did do a story on it so that people can see. If it were a review unit from Apple, then I'd say this one doesn't work well. Trade it out for another one. Oh, this one works fine. There's no issue. It's just that watch. But it's the one I bought with my own money, so it's not that like that. But anyway, we'll see how this goes in the future. And I'm still going to work on the watch review because there's so much to it if you're not affected by this. And I do think that they're going to resolve this, however it ends up being. So we'll see. All right, Mayo, aside from the watch discussion this week, there is new software in beta for the iPhone 11, 11 Pro that has actual changes. So what's going on for the 11, 11 Pro in beta this week?
Yeah, so obviously headlining 13.2 is the new, quote-unquote, deep fusion technology for the camera app, which is 11 and 11 Pro exclusive. This is like a new set of algorithms that Apple has developed as a thing that sits alongside night mode and smart HDR. And basically, depending on the current lighting conditions, the camera app automatically decides whether it's going to use the smart HDR processing, the deep fusion processing, or obviously the night mode processing. And for night mode, you get the on-screen indicator because, you know, you get the little badge that says night mode's active and it lights up in orange, and you know that's what's happening. But for the just generally taking photos, you as a user, you shouldn't have to know whether you're taking a smart HDR picture or a deep fusion picture. Apple's given it this, like, austere with the branding, which I think has kind of put too much emphasis on it as being a tangible thing. The way they intend it to be is a completely invisible improvement to the camera app that I think maybe if it had been ready in time to ship for 13.0, they might not have even mentioned it as a brand name, but because it was coming later, they needed something more fancy to say this is to associate with a software update, other than just saying, you know, this improves contrast and detail. Because as a general day-to-day user of the thing, you should just take pictures and not have to worry about it. And the phone, as long as it's working properly, should be able to select the right algorithm for the job and get the best shot. So smart HDR will be used basically in, you know, daylight situations, and then very dark situations go to night mode, and everything in between there is kind of using the deep fusion like pipeline. We've seen, you know, various people do tests with deep fusion on and off. At the moment, the basically the only good way to see the comparison for yourself is to disable capture outside the frame for photos, because for some weird reason Deep Fusion can only work if the capture out the frame is disabled. So you have this kind of battle between the two features side by side at the moment, which is kind of unfortunate, because you know, capture outside the frame is actually really useful, and I've gotten some benefits out of it, even in the fortnight of owning the 11 Pro. Like, there's been times where I've taken like a profile or like a straight on photo of someone and I accidentally chopped their legs off and it automatically pulled it back in. But I think the benefits of, you know, the Deep Fusion improvements, while small, are enough that I'm going to have to leave capture outside the frame disabled for the time being. And I did my own tests. I got like a jumper with threads and wool and did side-by-side shots on a tripod to try and see the differences. My test pictures were pretty like up to random variants of chance of the pictures being quite similar. We see more pictures online of bigger differences. I know Jeff Benjamin, who's doing the 95mm video for 13.2, saw a bigger change as well. It's nice improvement, and it definitely helps getting extracting detail and contrast and like image clarity. But it's not something that you're probably going to notice if you're just looking at these pictures on like an Instagram feed as they scroll by, or just on your phone screen. The differences that we're talking about here are when you're blowing a picture up to like a laptop screen or like a keynote screen, like obviously what they showed in September. Like, it's a nice improvement, but it is subtle ultimately at the end of the day. And I think in the best timeline, they wouldn't have given it so much focus as a thing, because it kind of set up expectations so high. That like the iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro cameras are really, really good on their own. This makes it slightly better. And it's basically invisible. Like, the picture takes a second or two to process. But apart from that, it basically just happens and you don't have to worry about it, which is great. But it's not something that you should like hang something off of, as like, you can definitely see this the moment you upgrade. Like, it's a very subtle difference between, you know, the beta and the non-beta. It's not like night mode where it's, you know, literally night and day difference in the output of the picture. It's just a nicer photo, right?
Yeah, I don't have any experience with this Deep Fusion stuff in the beta yet, because of the watch review and experience. I don't want to do any betas yet because I want to have the customer experience. But I'm like mildly interested, because I love taking pictures and having the best photos from the phone, which is an upgrade reason for me. But also, like, in what people are showing me, you know, what they're showing online, it's kind of, I can't quite pick it up, you know, like sometimes it's like really clear. And I think it just matters as to if it will take a better picture. If you need it, it will kick in, and if you don't, you won't see it. Because some of the variance, you know, differences between the two pictures can be up to chance, up to like a different angle, you know, kind of thing, slight tweaks. And it can be hard to show. And even what Apple has shown is like, these are two pictures taken with it, but not a comparison of with and without. It seems like to me that the thing to know is that you'll take better pictures. But it won't be like night and day, like night mode is. But I'm looking forward to trying it out whenever this is not in the beta.
Yeah, it's definitely better. It's not a back step, and you can definitely see a difference, but the difference is small relative to the kind of like so much focus the brand name of Deep Fusion has given it. Like, it sounds so mysterious and like sci-fi-y, but the end result is the pictures do look slightly better. That's kind of like the headline situation. A kind of story that came out this week that is, you can see in the 13.2 beta, is this thing where Apple's kind of made a concession to the like monopoly situation of iMessage in a way. So, but only specifically inside Siri, they're now teaching the Siri assistant to recognize other third-party apps in addition to iMessage when you ask Siri to text someone. So if you just say message Zach, it will, when this, and it's currently in the 13.2 beta, as long as all the third-party apps support the relevant APIs, it can learn that, oh, you actually always talk to Zach through WhatsApp, for instance, which I don't, but say we did. And then in the future, you wouldn't have to say message Zach using WhatsApp. So at the moment, the situation is, for all the SiriKit stuff, you have to say the name of the app in the request. If you don't say the name of the app, it always reverts to the stock Apple app. So what they're doing in 13.2 is letting it be more flexible about learning what app for each contact for messaging, and they're going to add phone calls later as well. So theoretically, it's pushing down some of the barriers that gave, you know, iMessage lock-in, admittedly in a very small way because it only affects Siri at the moment. Like, and I think a bigger play would be if they truly allow like the setting of default apps for things like music, because obviously we've seen them add the SiriKit audio API, but at the moment it doesn't matter how many times you ask Siri to play music, if you don't say a third party app name, it'll always use the Apple Music service and the music app. So if that kind of extends, if this is like a baby step towards, you know, more fully featured default app situation, then great. That's a pretty big, like, it's a nice customer feature because obviously people want it, and it probably is a big response to the like looming big tech antitrust issues that, you know, some people like to push on Apple quite heavily at the moment, especially in their kind of like political landscape. But I think this is a very, 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 very small change, and it's less a concession to antitrust and almost just like the way that Siri always should have worked. Like,
yeah,
it's just
years ago,
Siri smarter. Like, yeah, like you always text someone using this app, but we always just used messages because we're dumb. Like, that's just, it's just kind of fixing that equilibrium a bit more, which is great to see. But unless they go, you know, all the way and have like a default apps setting screen where you can pick for every single domain, this is the app I want to use for each one, you know, it's not going to make a big change in the scheme of things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of the UI for this, I think of as in the Contacts app, you can, it was a few updates ago, you know, major updates ago, but you can see, you can have a shortcut, like if it's in WhatsApp, you know, that you talk to them through WhatsApp, you can have a shortcut for that in the Contacts app, whether it's in you know, phone or Contacts. And then you can like tap that to message them in the WhatsApp app. And what is it, apps that use, was it CallKit? Is that what they're using under the hood?
Well, CallKit powers the contact card buttons, like okay. What you're talking about, but the integration for the Siri stuff is different.
Okay. But yeah. But so it's subtle improvement. We also saw that in the newest beta version of Spotify, it isn't out yet as we record, I don't believe, but they're working with Siri because they can. And the reason that's interesting is that there was this story over the summer that like they were like negotiating with Apple to be able to work with Siri, and then Pandora just did it out of the gate. And there must have been some terms they wanted to agree on, but Spotify seems to be doing that. We got announced messages with Siri. That's back now in the beta. You're running?
Yeah. So this was on through the summer. It was originally pitched as a coming with 13.0, but then when Apple started shaking everything up and they were worried about getting the OS shipped, a load of features got pulled out. Announced messages with Siri was one of those features that was then renamed to coming later this year. It didn't show up in 13.1, but it's back in 13.2. It seems to be a lot more stable and reliable now, whereas before it was kind of a bit creaky. I've been using it, you know, the last day or so, and it's really, really nice. If you don't see it in your settings, you might need to try repairing the AirPods, like delete them from Bluetooth and then repair them.
Convenient.
Because it only shows the screen when it detects that you're using a compatible earbuds, which at the moment is the H1 AirPods, the second gen AirPods, and PowerBeats Pro. If you don't see the second screens, and it's just kind of like bugged out, and even if you own the devices, try resetting and repairing and it should show up. It comes with a custom alert tone, which it might have had in the 13.0 betas, but I just never like, no, it's a really nice sound. It's different to the normal messages sound. And it will say stuff like, if you text me, it will say like, Zach said hello, and then you can say reply and just speak a reply and it sends it off. And then if you send another message before I've like got to it, it will be more natural in what the, you know, the voice in your ear says. It will say like, also Zach said this, like it just kind of it works really, really well. And the setting in one of the options is called reply without confirmation. So by default you have to use the trigger phrase. You don't have to use the trigger phrase, but when you say reply and then you say your response, Siri won't send it off immediately. It will read back to you what it transcribed, because they're trying to defend against the, oh, it sends something that you didn't mean. If you turn reply without confirmation on, you can just say reply, say your message, and then Siri will just send it without you having to do anything. And that's how I have it, because, you know, the transcription works well enough. So I've put reply without confirmation on, but by default, it will read back what it heard as your reply, and then you have to, like, confirm that you're going to send it.
Have you?
It works really, really well.
Have you had a situation where someone sends you a lot of, like, a long message, and all it tells you is, Benjamin sent you a long message? I had that during the beta.
That does happen.
Yeah, I had that in the beta in the beta process, but I haven't. I'm not on this beta now. But I wonder if that's handled the same way.
Yeah, it does still happen. I think it's probably reasonable, because otherwise you'd have Siri talking in your ear forever for like minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Most messages chats are short enough that it works. And by the way, this will work with third party apps too. Again, as long as they integrate the relevant APIs, which nobody does at the moment. But once they do that, you we actually be able to do WhatsApp with announced messages with Siri as well. So it's not just limited to iMessage, even if it is at the moment in the current state of the betas. Also, we saw a really big feature that we've been wanting for HomeKit this entire time.
Yes.
Which is the ability to ungroup the accessories. So basically to revert the decision that they made in iOS 13, where an accessory that exposes multiple services is all grouped into a single tile. And we've complained about this laboriously on this podcast before because it's so annoying.
I had a whole article on it and just showing how it didn't make any sense.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So now they have a button that you can go into and ungroup the accessory back into individual tiles. And if you change your mind, you can group them back together.
Yeah, the default is still wrong, but they give you a toggle, which makes me happy.
Yeah, and the default being grouped together, I can understand it because well,
go read my piece.
There are some pictures. There are some accessories where it being grouped actually does make sense. But and if you're a newcomer to HomeKit, you might actually like it that way. Like when we were talking about it on Twitter, there were quite a lot of people who would always be like, "Oh, I like it when it's grouped together." But you know, the way that we do it, it needs to be ungrouped. So at least they let you do it, right? Like.
It's, the third
maybe
party
it can be even smarter in the future and like automatically group things that make sense to be grouped and leave the other ones ungrouped, like when you add the accessory for the first time. I'm just thankful at this point that they've gone back on their decision at all.
Yeah, the third party home app, now called Home Plus, because Apple decided they didn't, even though they took the name Home, they didn't want someone else to have the name Home for a HomeKit app, even though it was fine for years. That app handles grouping really well, where if I have one sensor that captures humidity and temperature and air quality, it will show that on one tile because it can all fit, you know, with icons and numbers, which makes perfect sense to me. But then the Apple one will show just one of those, or it'll show none of those, and you've got to tap through to see them. I can't think of a scenario where it's better grouped, but I'm glad there's an option. I think it's the wrong default, but I'm glad they listened to all of the feedback from everyone, because it is the correct thing to do to give you a toggle. It made the Home app very bad, so I'm happy with that. Speaking about AirPods, there's this in the beta, Guy Rambo was first to find this new glyph, like icon representative of new AirPods hardware that is no doubt a new style of AirPods, presumably for noise cancellation, because it looks like they're like in-ear style with a little rubber, you know, tips to the end, like the Apple had that version of earbuds too, before EarPods. So that seems to be like it's coming sooner than later and a thing.
Yeah, the kind of funny thing with that is when the rumors of noise cancellation for AirPods were kind of brewing, everyone was kind of asking, like, how are they going to manage that on the current buds that are that small, that don't have great like isolation, and you can't really do active noise cancellation because it's really battery intensive and the AirPods naturally have to have little batteries? Well, the answer is, they're a different design that are essentially in-ear and can close fully over the, you know, the ear canal. I assume that these will be a separate option.
Yeah,
like a
totally.
Separate tier of AirPods. So
more expensive.
For me, I don't like... Yeah, they'll be more expensive. So right now you get the $149-$199 split just based off the wireless charging case. If Apple's generous, maybe the new lineup will be $149. You get the wireless charging case with the current style of
$159, right? Before anyone complains.
Sorry, $159. Yeah. Can't be that cheap. And then And then the new $199 will be this kind of AirPods Pro in-ear option. Mm-hmm. Maybe the prices would be slightly different, but that's how I'm expected to play out, because they're like in-ear buds are definitely wanted by a decent section of the community, but there's also a lot of customers who prefer, you know, the Apple classic bud style. I know that's me. Like, in-ear buds, to me, I've never really gone to them. I don't like how they look, and I don't really like how they feel, and even how they sound. When I'm walking down the street, I kind of like being able to hear the outside world. So I'm not really down on the whole, like, noise cancellation thing as much. Like, I'm not, like, rooting for it. So for me, I'm perfectly happy with the current AirPods design, and I don't really have any worries that they're going to go away. This is clearly going to be a different option in the lineup.
Yeah, what I'm curious to see is if they do active noise cancellation, or if they just say noise isolation because they're inner tips. And you know, I've got Powerbeats Pro, and I've got AirPods second generation, and I own both and I use both. Like, depends on the situation. I don't recommend everyone do that. I think if you just buy one, you know, you pick the one that's best for you. But I do find, you know, if there's times where I want to have, you know, hear what's around me better than the AirPods, or, you know, more casual usage, and then the Powerbeats Pro, if like I want to really hear the music, or it's a much noisier environment, or I'm working out and, you know, in that case, really want to hear the music and get much better battery life. So it just depends on kind of what you're using there. But, these seem like they might be kind of in between. So, probably in price too, because what, Powerbeats Pro are $250. And then,
yeah, Powerbeats Pro are $250.
Yeah. So you could definitely find something in between $160 and $250 without wireless charging. And then always, you know, have that wireless charging tier if you wanted to add on to that. I don't know. And you don't get wireless charging with Powerbeats Pro. The case is just a charging case with lightning, but no wireless charging. So that's the thing. One more thing before we go. New this week in software and everything is that Apple News Plus is now available in Australia, where I think half the country listens to the podcast. Is that right? It's like,
it's more, we do have a lot of Australian listeners.
Yeah, hello. And then in the UK where you live. So you are now you can have News Plus if you want to.
Yeah, and it's quite nice. They let you, as part of your single subscription, they have local newspapers for the UK. So they have the Times and the Sunday Times. But you also can still access the LA Times and the Wall Street Journal. So you get quite a lot of newspaper options as a Brit, which is quite nice. The magazine choices that are specific to Britain are fine. There's a good handful and good selection, but News Plus doesn't like float my boat, really. It's not really my thing. I'm going to do the trial and, you know, play around with it, but I don't expect to renew it. Like, I love TV Plus. I expect to love News Plus, not so much.
Yeah, our colleague Ben Lovejoy, this is much more his speed, and he wrote a piece on sort of his first dive in the News Plus in England, and so you get UK specific content and the US stuff. Does the US get the UK stuff now?
I believe it does.
Yeah, it makes sense. Know, yeah,
region specific, can, you know, region separation.
Right, and is there anything special to the Australia that you know about?
Yes, I can't remember the name of it, but okay. They do have Australian newspapers as well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, nice. All right, there's a few more things I want to say before we go, and then we'll wrap up. First thing is, I've mentioned on this podcast a few times that I was working kind of in the background between other stories on a review of the Peloton sort of like workout system, where you've got the Peloton bike and the Peloton treadmill, both with giant touch screens and like live video classes and on-demand video classes where you can, you know, do like a spin class or a running class or even like a walking class. And the big takeaway at the end of my review was that, something that they sort of promoted to me in the process, which is to try Peloton Digital, which is this iPhone app or this iPad app with AirPlay. And you can do most of the same things on your own equipment at the gym, or if you have your own bike or treadmill. You don't get the same level of like controls and everything. There's not as much integration, of course. But it's a really good sort of like monthly subscription, but a trial into what you could do with Peloton without spending $2,000 or $4,000 on a machine. And it's a really cool way to use your iPhone or iPad as sort of a workout companion. And then you can log everything with your watch. And one of the things that I tried just for the review that I wouldn't have otherwise is you can do outdoor run sessions, which I just assumed were the audio taken from video classes. But it's not. It's actually like the trainers that you see in the classes on the bike or the treadmill are recording outdoor specific run classes with music and coaching. And for me, someone who runs mostly on my own, unless it's like with a friend or in a race, having someone with that level of experience doing like this advice can fit everybody. You work on your posture, work on, you know, different things, throughout the run. I found it to be really that's like the big thing for me about the Peloton ecosystem is just the digital experience. And then if you have the machines, then they're really nice. But if you just like, just for example, if you have an Apple Watch and you want to find new ways to close your rings, check out Peloton Digital on the iPhone or iPad or on the Mac or the web, because that you can make 30 minutes go by really fast by having, you know, a video class or an audio lesson in your ear as you're like running outside. So my biggest feedback for them was you've got to have an Apple Watch app. Because you could load the music over, you know, sync it over and then run with just the watch and track it in the workout app. And hopefully, you know, they're going to do that. So, that's finished.
That'd be cool.
I released the latest episode of Watch Time, my podcast about the Apple Watch and health and fitness. And, my guest was Federico Vitici from Mac Stories. We got to talk about how he uses the watch, sort of check in on his, second life story from last year about, you know, wanting to, you know, have a good workout routine and share gratitude and focus on mindfulness with the watch. And then also talk a bit about his iOS 13 and iPadOS 13 review process, but not something that you'll hear on other podcasts because it's very much about how do you do that for the whole summer and, you know, a full season. And then also, you know, be committed to your personal health with the watch and everything. And the answer in short is everything goes off the rails, but there are consequences to that. You know, ultimately we've all got to manage big projects, whether it's, you know, through work or family. And it's a constant sort of journey on figuring out how do you do that? And manage your, you know, personal health and fitness with the watch. I think even though the episode is pretty specific to like kind of a unique scenario, it can be relatable in lots of ways. So I was proud of that. And then finally, it's unfortunately the last call for my fundraiser through the service that I've been raising money for my local animal shelter, as an effort to, just donate money to them as I'm planning and training to go do this Disney half marathon in November. The service closed, or they're shutting down their feature where you can just raise money for your cause and not have it be a partner cause that they work on too. And so my November 10th deadline for that of raising $1,300 for my animal shelter got pushed up by a month to November, or excuse me, October.
This is so stupid. They didn't even let you like run it out. Just cut it off so abruptly. It's stupid.
Yeah, I was not super happy about that. But Just Giving is the service. You can go to justgiving.com/crowdfunding/ApolloZach, or just look for me on Twitter at ApolloZach, and you can find the link to that. But I'm trying to raise $1,300 now before October the 9th, whenever they close this feature down. They will send me the money and I will give it to the shelter. But my campaign to raise $1,300 by November 10th got pushed back by, you know, shortened by a month. So humongous thanks to everyone who's donated so far, including you, Mayo. 31 supporters. I'm at 74% of my goal. $970. And I've even sort of like raised the benefit here for people who are donating. I've got these 9 to 5 Mac stickers that are really cool. You can put them on your MacBook or wherever. They're like die cut. So they're not like rectangles. They're like shaped as the logo. And so anyone who donates $40 or more, you can even donate anonymously on the site, but then just send me your receipt and then send me your shipping information over Twitter DM or an email or Instagram DM. And I will mail you one of these stickers, you know, as a perk for donating $40 or more. And a few people already have, so I'll make sure everyone gets those stickers. But I hope even with the month, you know, deadline sooner that this works out. I'm really proud of it so far. Again, the big effort that I'm doing is in November running a half marathon at Disney, which will be awesome. But it's been so helpful in just training for that, to see these emails come in where someone donated $1, $5, you know, $40, $50, $100, because it's going to be a great feeling, you know, taking that check over to the shelter and kind of surprising them with this. They have no idea about it. So check out that. There'll be a link in the show notes, too, to do that. And with that being said, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you like the podcast and you're a new listener, please subscribe so you can hear new episodes every week. If you're a longtime listener, please give us a rating and let us know what you think about the show. Share it with a friend. We really appreciate that. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMAO.
And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.